You are Locked On Spurs, your daily San Antonio Spurs podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I am Jeff Garcia, and you are listening to Locked On Spurs. Welcome to Locked On Spurs right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. And your San Antonio Spurs get back on the court later tonight as they host the Indiana Pacers for their first meeting of the season. It'll be the first of two, as you already know, East-West, you know how the NBA schedule works. But the Spurs are coming in with a win, defeating the Lakers, the LeBron James-led Lakers, in a thrilling overtime game, 143-142. And needless to say, the day off was much needed. Not only for you, probably for me and my guest, Jim Lefko, is going to be joining me in a few minutes. What a long night it was for Spurs fans who stayed up for that. So let's go ahead and introduce my friend, my colleague over at News 4 San Antonio, Jim Lefko. Jim, welcome back to Locked On Spurs.
Hi, Jeff. Good to be with you.
Yeah, did you finally catch up on your sleep after that long night?
Yeah, it was fun. It's always interesting the next morning when bleary-eyed Spurs fans commune to chat about what happened the night before, but it was definitely a more positive conversation with work colleagues after a victory than after a loss.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad everybody stood up for a win versus a loss. I think that would not have been worth it. A lost person, I probably would have been grumbling the next day.
Well, it's funny, too, that when you win, all the positives are what everybody wants to talk about. And when you lose, all the negatives are what everybody wants to talk about. And I've kind of found that the opposite should be the case. The best time to really learn and improve is after a loss, to focus in on what needs to be done. And then the same thing after a win, you tend to get a little giddy over what happened. But there's some things you need to shore up after giving up 142 points.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's go ahead and tackle the main topic tonight, this show, that is. That is the Spurs-Pacers later tonight at the AT&T Center, 7:30 Central Standard Time tip-off. And the Spurs are back at home. They got a much-needed day off. They even canceled practice, or shoot-around, that is. So, hopefully the Spurs are back in to full versus empty. But the Pacers are coming in. They're 2-2. They're winless on the road right now, and obviously the usual suspects, Victor Oladipo, he's going to be a handful. Don't know if Sabonis will be playing, but he's been a nice young part for their future moving forward. How do you see this game?
Well, the Pacers are still coming together, too, as every team in the NBA is, and you mentioned they're 0-2 on the road. Gotten blown out twice, lost at Milwaukee by 17, and they're coming off a 10-point loss against Minnesota on Monday. So have not been a good road team, and as we know, the Spurs are 1-0 at home. So, on paper, this looks to be something that would favor the Spurs, but I wouldn't take Indiana lightly. I used to work up there, and the team has turned over from 3 years ago when I moved here from Indianapolis, but a lot of talent up there. You mentioned Victor Oladipo, great acquisition from Oklahoma City in that Paul George deal. He's certainly an all-star candidate perennially. We've had some preliminary conversations about early season MVPs, and depending on how things shake out, he's certainly their best player. He would not be a Tier 1 MVP candidate at this point, but certainly Tier 2. He fills up the stat book, and very exciting young player, can score with the best of them, plays pretty good D, and he's the heart of that team. So it's got a lot of weapons. They've got, I believe, five players scoring in double figures. Tyreek Evans, Sabonis, Turner, and Bogdanovich. And they got McDermott off the bench. So it's a good team. And Thaddeus Young, Corey Joseph. I mean, there's players that Spurs fans are familiar with. Darren Collison at the point. So it's a nice mix of veterans and younger players. Miles Turner with his Texas background. It's a fun team. They move it up the court like everybody does in the NBA. And I think it'll be a good test for the Spurs tonight as they figure out all the pieces that are coming together for them too.
Yeah, well, the Spurs did go 0-2 versus Indiana last season, so hopefully the Spurs can right that ship and get a W. You mentioned about how Indiana likes to, get the points up there. Well, they also play defense. Believe it or not, actually a team that actually plays defense in this NBA season. They're averaging 108 points per game and allowing, I know this is like great for the NBA right now, at least defensively, 103.5. So they're doing a fang-up job on the defensive end. The Spurs, on the other hand, we know they're putting up points, but they're also allowing more points than adding. Jim, your assessment.
Well, the NBA is still shaking out, you know, with some of these new rules. And I believe you posted, you're posting a story on the website about, you know, how offense has kind of been exploding. And, you know, so far, you know, a couple weeks into the season, we are seeing that. You know, the Spurs used to annually shoot to try to, you know, average defensively under 100 points a game for their opponents, and they had no problem reaching that. This year, that's going to be a challenge. The new look NBA, 110 might be the new 100. And maybe even higher than that, as we saw the other night in Los Angeles. So it's an up-tempo game now. You're getting a lot more shots, a lot more possessions. I think fans are going to enjoy it. Defensive purists might be the only ones that are scratching their heads a little bit and wondering, is this my father's NBA? And the answer to that is it's not. It's a new offensive-minded NBA that values three-point shooting. You're seeing free throw attempts and made go up. And, you know, suddenly a 25-point quarter that used to be the average, obviously, to get to 100 is a lackluster offensive quarter. You know, you're shooting more for 30 to 35.
Yeah. For a minute there, I thought tonight's game was going to be held in the Hemisphere Arena. You know, old ABA teams playing at the rate of the scoring we've been seeing to start the new season. But, you know, the Spurs, you mentioned it when we entered the show, they're just scoring the ball, but defensively they're lacking, and obviously a lot of people are pointing the finger at the lack of perimeter defense. Obviously with Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green, Kyle Anderson, DeJounte Murray, you know, some are not a Spur, and one is just shelved because of injury. People think this is exposing it. Is it really a such thing as the Spurs being exposed at that spot and guards like Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum just tearing up San Antonio? Or is it just the way it is in the NBA?
Yeah, I think it's a combination. The Spurs, in my opinion, got better offensively during the offseason and did not go that way defensively. You know, they're not the same team they were. So teams are always moving up or down, and collectively, you know, maybe they're the same. Maybe that averages out. But yeah, I think they're not going to have any problem, you know, putting points on the board this year. We've seen that already. But defensively, one of the guys we thought maybe would be a little bit more effective defensively was Jakob Poeltl, and he didn't play against the Lakers. That was kind of interesting to me. You know, he went from starting to not even being in a rotation. So they're still figuring out who they've got. They went with Cunningham, who is a strong defensive player, and did a nice job on LeBron, as well as anybody can do on LeBron. So it looks like his minutes maybe are going to be increasing. But some of this is going to be situational, you know, as they look at matchups. And there's no LeBron James on the Indiana Pacers roster. So maybe we'll see a rim protector like Poeltl, you know, get more time, and you know, as they continue to shift and adjust to who they're playing on a given night.
Yeah, let's talk about the Pacers. We mentioned Victor Oladipo, another high-scoring guard. We saw as I mentioned, Lillard and McCollum did to San Antonio. We saw what Kyle Kuzma did to San Antonio. Do the Spurs perimeter guys, do they have their hands full again?
Well, and it's going to be an interesting matchup. You know, you would probably think somebody like DeRozan is going to get Oladipo duty. And as we know, DeRozan has been scoring at a pretty prolific pace, but defense is not his strength either. And Oladipo, he fills the stat sheet. You know, he's not only scoring about 22 points a game, but he's a great rebounder, about 6 a game, and a really good passer, 3 a game. So, you know, this is a guy who does it all, and he's the soul of that team. And if they can slow him down, or at least, you know, get him off his game a little bit, maybe push him out a couple steps further than he wants to be, slow his drives to the basket, that's going to be a key. But they've got a nice front line, too. You know, Sabonis and Turner and Bogdanovich. I mean, there's some talent there, you know, across their front line. So that'll be an interesting match of strength versus strength because, you know, as we know, Aldridge is off to a really good start as well. So we'll see how he does against their big men. It's a little saltier front line than the Spurs saw against the Lakers, who basically, you know, had one big man. So it's going to be a different set of issues. It's Eastern Conference basketball, which back in the day used to mean maybe a little bit more, you know, slower and lower scoring. But I don't think you can use those words to describe either conference right now.
One thing that I've been seeing the Spurs do outside of putting up numbers on the scoreboard is they're very good at valuing the ball, Jim, this season, at least through 3 games. As of right now, they lead the league in assisted turnover ratio 3-1, and it's not surprising through the first 3 games where they have under double-digit turnovers for the game. I mean, talk about valuing the ball.
Yeah, that is interesting because you would figure, you know, intuitively that if it's faster paced and they're getting up and down the court quicker and they're getting more shots up, that you'd assume that there'd be more turnovers. And again, it's a little early in the season to conclude, you know, anything definitively. We're only a week and a half, 2 weeks into the season, three, four games depending on the schedule per team. But it's a nice trend. You want to keep turnovers low. The Spurs traditionally have been a low turnover team, but that was more of the veteran, you know, star-laden lineup that they used to have. If this team that's still getting to know each other can keep turnovers to a minimum, that can only help them moving forward.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult to, you know, put a gauge on this Spurs team or the Pacers, considering they only have, well, for the Indiana, four games under their belt and San Antonio, three. But early indication is this, you know, it's kind of obvious, but you know, you shoot the ball well, you're likely to win. And so far in the two wins that Indiana has had, they won them both. 2-0 when they shoot over 50%. So, again, I guess I'm circling back to the Spurs defense. You know, so far, so early, you know, you hold Indiana under 50%, you might have a shot at beating them. But Spurs haven't been able to do that with teams.
Yeah, and that's again, it's an adjustment for Spurs fans, because not only were we used to seeing a good defensive effort mean the team scoring less than 100 points against the Spurs, but that also meant that they would be shooting less than 50%, well under 50%. And we're not seeing that at this point in the season. So the two kind of go hand in hand. But I agree with you. If they could hold Indiana to under 50%, that certainly helps the Spurs' chances. But, you know, that's easier said than done. And if you go back to that first quarter that the Spurs had against the Lakers the other night, the Spurs couldn't miss. And, you know, the Lakers looked like the worst defensive team in the NBA. Well, by halftime, the game was even. Law of averages kicked in. And, you know, you're not going to shoot 60, 65% over the course of a game. The key, though, is to maintain that defensive intensity so a team doesn't get off to a start like the Spurs did the other night. And I think, you know, all coaches value that. I'm sure that Coach Walton gave the Lakers a nice pep talk before the Spurs game Monday night. But, you know, that kind of thing happens. So the same thing to watch tonight when the Spurs, you know, face off against the Pacers. You know, who's going to get off to that quick start, and then can they sustain it? Because there's nothing more fragile in the NBA than a huge early lead. Sometimes I almost think that's a negative for a team. If you get up by 15, 18 points, you know, late first quarter, early second, it almost seems artificial because you know the other team is going to come back. But I don't think you want to get down against the Pacers, who probably figure to be, you know, primed to get off to a good start tonight too.
Yeah, and add the fact too that they're winless on the road. You know, they probably want to get that off their back too and pick up their first road win. Jim and I are going to continue our chat on tonight's Spurs Pacers matchup, but we're going to take a quick break and we're going to be right back. All right, we are back, and I am joined by Jim Lefko, my colleague over at News 4 San Antonio, who has the unenviable task sometimes to actually edit my work. They opened up a Pandora's box there, but no, I'm kidding, Jim. Thank you for your help. Jim, you know, as far as tonight's contest, it's almost kind of a check mark on the box. We know what DeMar DeRozan is going to give San Antonio, you know, points and lots of them. But if you're looking at some guy on the court that really needs to step it up tonight against Indiana, who would you be looking at?
Well, I think the guy who's in the hot seat and has been every game this year has been Brent Forbes. And we saw a really nice, you know, Forbes explosion against the Lakers, you know, hitting some nice shots, just playing with confidence. You know, his game really seems to be rounding into form. He's scoring about 15 points a game. And it's just been nice to see. So now that, you know, he's, again, proven that he can play as a starting point guard, you know, filling in for the injured players, he can produce offensively. What's he going to be able to provide defensively? Because that's, to me, what's going to keep him on the court and keep him in this role, even when some of the other players that are injured return. You know, DeRozan, as we mentioned repeatedly, is a great offensive player, but that defense is not his strength. So can they afford to have that DeRozan-Forbes backcourt where they're both, you know, maybe under average when it comes to defense, and that's the area. And it's not a lack of effort. You know, I don't think anybody that's watched the Spurs through the first three games would criticize the effort. You know, Forbes is a hustler. He's working his tail off out there, both ends of the court. But it's not necessarily always about effort. You have to have results, and that's going to mean not being exposed. And some other point guards have exposed him to this point. And he's going to be, you know, coming up against quick guards every night. You know, this isn't a team with an elite point guard, but Collison's effective. He's quick, and you know, it just comes down to Forbes staying in front of him, not letting him take over a game, and at least making him work on both ends of the court. So at worst, it's a tie, and that's, I think, what he needs to strive for. So keep hitting those nice three-point shots, give the Spurs another option on offense, and play a salty defense, and that's all they can expect out of him.
Yeah, you mentioned the article that I'll have, at least by the time this show goes up, on the Spurs Zone. We can find at News4 San Antonio and Fox 29, sanantonio.com, as well as Jim's work as well. LaMarcus Aldridge has been loving the 1-2 combo of Mills and Forbes on the court together. And basically he just says he loves that they give them some scoring, some much-needed buckets. How have you been liking that combo on the court? If LMA is liking it, maybe you might be liking it too, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Patty's he's a pro. You know, look at it. Look what he did, you know, to basically, you know, hit the game-winning shot against the Lakers at the end of that that marathon overtime game. And I thought it was neat that the ball wound up in his hands. You know, Patty doesn't have thousands of game-winning shots on his resume, but they have confidence in him hitting that mid-range jumper. He shot it with confidence. Again, he knows how to, you know, move really, really well without the ball. I think you're seeing that the rules that have you know, made offense more productive this year are helping players like Mills, who's constantly moving and cutting and getting open looks. We've seen him get a couple of backdoor layups because he's you know, such a constant perpetual motion machine. And his teammates know to look for him. You know, DeRozan's found him on a couple nice cuts. Gasol always is looking for him. So, you know, he's developing a nice consistency with that second team. And then, as we saw in L.A., he's on the court at the end of the game. And I've said before, I'm not sure how important it is who starts. It's usually more important who finishes. And if Pop is confident with Mills and Forbes on the court at the end of a game like he was in Los Angeles, then that's a nice pairing to see what they can do, because that presents quite a challenge for opposing teams, because, you know, you're always going to have Aldridge and DeRozan out there and Rudy Gay. Yeah. So, you know, there's five different guys that you almost have to game plan for in a last-second game-winning type situation.
In the last lockdown Spurs, I talked about wanting to see LaMarcus Aldridge get going a bit more into at least finding his groove. You know, in the first game versus Minnesota, he misses some shots and he normally make. Okay, chalk it up to rust and the beginning of a new season. Kind of saw a little iffy shooting from him in the second game, but in the third game versus the Lakers, he exploded. You know, 30 plus points. You know, double digit rebound. You know, was pretty much a rock for San Antonio. But if you look at his numbers, Jim, so far, 51% of his scoring is in the paint, while 22.9% is from the mid-range. Would you like to see a little more of a balance there? You know, to see him maybe knocking down that little mid-range shot?
Sure. You know, you want him to, and I think you'll see even more of that as he gets more comfortable with DeRozan, although I think they were pretty comfortable from day one. But, you know, they're both right now shooting about DeRozan's at 44%, Aldridge 45% overall from the field. So, you know, for DeRozan, that's a good number. For Aldridge, you know, it's a little under what he probably is going to, you know, get to once he reclaims his groove. But I don't worry about a veteran like Aldridge. He's been in the league long enough now. He knows where his spots are. The other team knows where his spots are, and he still gets the ball there and hits it. And, you know, from 18 feet in, you know, I like when the ball's in his hands, you got to think that the percentages are in the Spurs' favor. So no concerns about Aldridge. You know, maybe he could finish a little stronger, but his rebounding has been solid. You know, he put up some big numbers there too. So, again, we're three games in with a new cast of characters, still learning, you know, where their spots are on the court. So no concerns for me at all with Aldridge's game. I think he's been the workhorse that we saw last year. He knows he's got a wingman in DeRozan to share the scoring burden with, and I think you're going to see these two guys, you know, going for 20 almost every night, both of them. And that's nice to know that you're going to start each game with, you know, between 40 and 50 points from your two big scorers. And if you're trying to get to 110, let's say, that just means the rest of them are responsible for maybe 55 or 60 points. So it's a nice duo to have, and we're not used to seeing you know, this kind of pairing. We were worried a couple years ago how the whole Kawhi LaMarcus thing would work out, and now we're finding that the next iteration is DeMar, and it's really working out real well with those two together down low and high.
I mean, talk about a 1-2 punch, DeMar and LaMarcus, just really you know, being those type of threats, one inside, one outside, one slasher, one guy who can protect the rim, one guy who can crash the boards. You know, speaking of DeRozan, we know he can score that and much more, but my goodness, when did he become the next coming of John Stockton? Jim, I mean, seriously, 14 assists to lead San Antonio in the win versus L.A.?
Yeah, that was nice to see. You know, just I still think the more he can drive and kick, you know, because he attracts so much attention defensively, and when he penetrates and gets past his man, you're seeing defenses collapse on him. And, of course, that's only going to open up shooters on the outside, and that's where, you know, somebody like Forbes or Bertans, who's just sitting out there at that three-point line, or even Gasol or Aldridge occasionally from three, Rudy Gay, you know, all these guys are going to get open looks because of the attention DeRozan gets. And that's probably been the biggest surprise for me this season, is to see. I knew he was a good passer. I didn't know he was a great passer.
Yeah.
And as he showed against the Lakers, 14 assists
for
a guy who's not really the point guard. Although, again, I think we get caught up a little bit in positions. And I would argue that DeRozan is playing point guard-ish. You know, when he's out there with Forbes, they're kind of both, you know, sharing the ball. But you know, you're seeing the ball in DeRozan's hands quite a bit. And I think he's running the offense, and it's going through him, and he's probably going to emerge as the undisputed team leader for assists, at least if the yearly, you know, indications are through three games, and that's great. He's finding guys in spots that they can really produce. He's probably responsible for, you know, a huge number of Aldridge's baskets just because of the way that he can find LaMarcus. And again, the more they play together, I think that's only going to become a better connection, and it's already off to a great start.
Yeah, I guess he wasn't kidding when he said he's coming into the new season with San Antonio with a chip on his shoulder, and recently said he's letting his dark side out on the court. I mean, he is really bringing his A game to San Antonio. And, you know, you recently wrote an article about a former Spur, Kawhi Leonard, being heads above the rest, at least right now, the way he's playing as far as league MVP. But a lot of Spurs fans have been giving you some pushback on social media saying, are you forgetting about DeMar? I mean, Jim, you're obviously not forgetting about DeMar, are you?
No, I think DeMar, if the Spurs win 50 to 55 games, contend for a division or conference championship, and he scores at a 25-point-per-game pace, he's definitely in that conversation. My point with Kawhi is that I think the path to supremacy in the East is much easier than the path to supremacy in the West. And if you're not on one of those elite teams, it's harder to get the national attention. I think Kawhi's going to get it because if he continues to play at the pace he's been at, Toronto figures to be one or two in the East, really other than Boston. I don't see anybody that's going to knock them off. And the way Toronto started, and if indeed Kawhi has his tendinopathy behind him, I think he's going to be in the conversation all season. But, yeah, DeRozan, the start he's had, if he leads the team the way he's been doing it for, you know, the next 6 months, sure, he's definitely in that conversation. And as I noted in my article, I would have given it to LeBron as the early season, you know, the preseason MVP candidate.
Yeah.
And all he's done is start 0-3 and shown, you know, what it's like to join a new cast of characters. So he has certainly slipped, in my opinion. And, yeah, I'd give DeRozan an arrow heading up with the way that he's led the Spurs so far through three games.
He was nominated for the NBA's Week 1 Western Conference Player of the Week. That honor went to Denver's Jokic. And you know, that just goes to show you that DeMar is on the NBA's radar. They're seeing what he's doing in San Antonio, and hopefully that'll only improve. Though my only concern, though, Jim, is as of right now, he's well over 35-plus minutes per game. You figure some way, somehow down the road in this season, Pop's going to see that and say, okay, you know, you need to bring it back down a bit right now, DeMar.
Yeah, well, I think the numbers are skewed a little bit, too, because of the small number of games they played and the fact that Monday's game went to overtime. So, you know, had you taken that extra 5 minutes off there, maybe it's now a little bit more closer to what we're used to seeing from Spurs stars, but I agree with you that Pop's not going to play him anywhere close to 40 minutes a game as the grind hits. I think as you start to see some back-to-backs, you know, you might see the minutes come down. But, you know, this week's schedule, you know, after tonight's game, they don't play again until Saturday night against the Lakers again. So, you know, I could see, depending on how his legs are, all the team's legs after that flight back from Los Angeles, you could see some good minutes tonight from the star players. And then with, you know, all those days off to rest for the Lakers again Saturday, you know, again, maybe we'll see some big minutes. But as you know, even though they've stretched out the season and tried to, you know, minimize the toll on players, it's still a grind. And they're still going to have some stretches where they're playing four games in a week and jetting in different time zones. And that's when you'll see the minutes come down. And we'll see if DeRozan is one of those players that gets a rest game here or there. You know, we've seen it before with star players. You know, Aldridge certainly will be a candidate for that at some point, not too long. And maybe DeRozan will be in the same category where they just give him a night off to rest his legs and his body.
All right, so we're going to take our second break, but when we get back, it's time to put it out there. Who do we predict will win tonight's contest? Stay tuned. Okay, we are back, and once again, I'm joined by Jim Lefkoe, my colleague over at News 4 San Antonio. You can follow him on Twitter at Jim Lefkoe and read everything he has on Silver and Black over at the Spurs Zone. You can find at News 4 San Antonio and Fox29SanAntonio.com. All right, Jim. Spurs, Pacers, first meeting. Spurs are on a little two-game skid versus Indiana. How do you see this game going down?
Well, I'm not a big believer in looking at the history from previous seasons just because of the way, you know, lineups change. There's a certain player for the Spurs who wasn't here last year, DeMar DeRozan. So I think the fact that the Spurs are at home, they're undefeated here, Pacers are on the road, they're winless. I think, you know, this one on paper anyway goes to the Spurs. And the way the Pacers have not been that competitive on the road at the end of games, this might be another one where, you know, maybe the Spurs get a chance to do the opposite of what they did to their fans in that overtime game against the Lakers and put this one away a little bit earlier. But I like the Spurs' chances tonight.
Yeah, for a minute, I thought the other player you're referring to was Joffrey LaVerne. You know, that was not here in Spurs anymore. You know how powerful
I miss
he
old
was.
Joffrey. Yeah, he's, I liked him. He provided a little spark off the bench, but I guess he's taken his talents across the pond. So, good for him.
Yeah, good luck to you, Big Joff. But all right, for me, yeah, I'm going to go with you. I see the Spurs picking up the W later on tonight at the AT&T Center. I think it's going. Obviously, I mean, it's not hard to say it's going to be a high scoring game, but. The Spurs, I just think they have that little extra gear in them right now. They got, on paper, a better team, a better squad. DeMar DeRozan is playing out of his mind right now. LaMarcus seemingly getting back to that LaMarcus feel, you know, after what he did in L.A. And I think Brent Forbes is looking a little bit more comfortable. We're seeing that he's not necessarily the primary ball handler at times. Yeah, he starts as the point guard, but it's almost a, like point guard by committee, and I think that helps him with his confidence. So overall, yeah, with the Indiana's road woes so far this early season, I see San Antonio moving to 3-1 on the season. But Jim and I, we're done talking. We gave you our predictions. We want to hear what you have to say. You can follow me on Twitter at JeffGSpursZone or email me at JeffGarcia74@gmail.com. And Jim, take it away.
Well, hopefully listeners know where to find me by now, but if they don't, on Twitter, at Jim Lefko. And as you mentioned a couple times, they're welcome to read our stories on our websites. I'm writing a column once a week to try to get people thinking maybe a little bit differently than they might have otherwise about the Spurs, but they can always see those stories on News 4 San Antonio website and KABB as well. So feel free to read us there.
Yeah, and you know you want to read his Kawhi Leonard article, listeners. I know you do. I just know you do because you so embrace him. And by the way, did you see that embrace between Parker and Danny Green when they met?
Yeah, that was a nice. Yeah. That was a really nice moment. And as everybody's noted on Twitter, where was the embrace between Kawhi and Tony? And I joke with someone. I go, that happened back behind the scenes.
Oh, of course.
He didn't want any publicity for that one. But I'm kind of kidding. I'm guessing that there probably was not a big embrace, but between those two.
I'm suspecting, you know, that Parker probably told Danny to tell Kawhi that his hugs are 100% better than his hugs. So something to that effect. But no, it was, yeah, it was great to see two former Spurs embrace. And after all the battles they've been through in San Antonio, once a Spur, always a Spur, as they say, Jim.
Well, for most of the ex-Spurs.
Well, yeah, for
not,
most.
Not for everybody.
Yeah, we can lump in there Dennis Rodman probably as well. But true. All right, but with that, for Jim Lefko, I am Jeff Garcia. We're going to put a lock on this episode of Locked On Spurs. We'll be right back.